This episode of conversation is supported by the generous donations of Klaus Schwab. You can support us too at truthmeets.com. Click on the support link.
Episode number, I think it'd be, well, there's two that you haven't heard before. You would have heard if you're listening to this now, possibly. But it's going to take a while for this to get released. Episode 65, I do believe. Be told, Sunday the 26th of April, 2026. We're all still alive. I've just come back from the winner is Melbourne, I'll just tell you right now. It's an absolutely fantastic city. It's got that Wellington vibe, which I reckon is the other favourite city. And you know why it's nice? Not a lot of high-rise everywhere in some spots. So you can be walking around the inner city and there's old buildings that are only one story tall. Wellington's full of that as well. I love it. But guess what? You're not going to see much of that in the future. Not much of that in the future. There's a thing that they call, and I'm not joking here because I speak to the leading architects in Australia, if not the world, on a regular basis because I'm the humble cleaner that knows too much or talks too much. And one of the guys was telling me that what they used to call the city for when you're doing parks and design and buildings, you had a certain amount of blue sky that you had to leave exposed for the public. All that's gone now. Now it can be reflection of blue sky, which means you're just going to be looking at the reflection of the blue sky on some monstrosity tower. And I just saw today as a friend of mine doing quite well for himself, quietly, very well for himself. He's getting a chain of hotels set up, small boutique ones, and he's doing one in Tasmania, I do believe. Anyway, he's off gallivanting around Hong Kong at the moment, or Shanghai, wherever my son was this year. Now, you have no concept a lot of the time of how big these cities are, you know, until you get someone with their smartphone staring out the window and showing it what it really is like without all the gloss. And this, what you can see through the pollution and haze is just fucking incredible. The size of the thing, looking down on it, I'm talking about, not looking at a skyline, looking down about. So you just have to realize that every alleyway down there is full of markets. Every alleyway, every nook and corner, just like in Melbourne, absolutely fantastic city. It is full of young people, very vibrant. And yes, they've utilized, like in Asia, laneways. Every laneway you can go down, there'll be a little hole-in-the-wall cafes or old factory converted into cafes. Great vibe. But we are a service economy now, obviously, so we're not going to be doing the manufacturing part. It's all going to come from overseas. And sadly, I just saw the other day Australia's last glass manufacturers, whatever they're called, that make glass windows, gone. It's now all coming from overseas, pre-made up stuff in Asia, China, wherever. Sorry, just shoving the door. But yeah, so it was a fantastic three-day trip, two and a half days. My son, we've spoken about him when he's been on here before, or not on here, but maybe on Fakeologist, or Rick and Rollo possibly, Norbert. Well, let me just say this. The guy wrote, performed, and produced with his flatmate in university camp in his apartment. Russian guy, Ivan, what a talent. Oh my God. And Ivan's girlfriend's a choreographer, and there's 30 something dancers dancing. My son and the co-writer hosted the thing. It was fantastic. And because my son's inherited this strange, surreal stuff from his father, who was watching Monty Python aged 4 and The Prisoner aged 4. He put that in. There was that kind of stuff was in this play. It gets taken over by an AI bot, like a Wild Hell 9000 rather. That's one of his other flatmates is superimposed on this huge big screen behind them, controlling them, and absolutely just brilliantly done. Incredible dancing, incredible acting, and very funny. And I know who wrote it. It was him. Absolutely brilliant. And even the name he called it. He called it the name of an fantastic review that you get, like astounding first one night only, da 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 da, about a 30 word title. I think I've shared it on somewhere, but yeah, absolutely fantastic. I also talk about, well, we're going back to what I was talking about before, this incredible cityscape that I looked down on. A friend of mine, I think it's Shanghai. I mean, I know Asia's big and I've been to parts of it, but some of these Chinese places are just beyond fucking huge. And I was thinking about when you saw, have you ever seen the movie Baraka? Baraka, which came out about in the 80s, was it early 80s. And it was incredible, be Europeans as usual, clever photographers, cinematographers, went around and they filmed nature and cities and mixed it up together with amazing music. Human living biomes or ants, you know, like they're filming cities with people sped up running around in ants' nests. Ants, brilliant, brilliant movie. There's three of them. Koina Kowatsi, Baraka, and something else. Highly recommended. No AI used. No AI used. Let me just tell you right now. And I've got Jan Eric coming in as usual. We did a show last week, which you wouldn't have heard yet, and not anyone can probably listen into this, or maybe they can, if there's any live listeners. I don't think there would be, which is one of the reasons why I like doing it this time, because I noticed on the Fakeologist Audio chat, they had like 20 people last night, and I know a lot of them are big talkers. How the fuck can you get a word in, is what I say. One-on-one conversation. Maximum, as far as I'm concerned, or three talkers, or four polite ones, like what's that show that Critical Sinker's doing? There's at least four people or five people on that, but they're all very polite and they all talk. There's no screaming. I mean, I wouldn't go on that show because I'd ruin it for them. Talk over the top of people rudely, not rudely, I just have to get the information out, because if I lose that information that popped into my head, it's gone forever. You've heard me forget things before, particularly when I'm talking to Rollo, who's still not well, or he wasn't last week. Very crook, he said, which means very sick in Australian. Very crook. And if he says he's crook, I'd put money on it. He's very sick. So prayers out to you, Rollo. May Rollo, he's the one that should be doing it, actually, doing the Frank, who actually I have to talk about before I get Jan coming. I met up with Frank the Salt Guy. What a fantastic night. What a generous man that guy is. He turned up clutching a 2 kilo box of his sea salt to give me as a present, which was fantastic because took it into the hotel because I'd had to lug that around. Me and him went for a few hours, maybe more. It was a really good night. He's a wild one though. Don't mistake him for being the quiet one. Well, you know, he's a bit older than me, probably 5 or 6 years, possibly. He is a wild one, that man. But it was a great night, lots of cocktails, beers. I didn't have to pay for hardly anything, almost nothing, except because I drink so fast, I'd run up and get myself an in-betweener, because I drink like a fish when I'm on it, that's for sure. So, it was a really good night. Frank, the Salt Guy, 15 out of 10 for your generosity and show me. I mean, we were right opposite his uni campus where he did his nuclear science geology and mining stuff where he got all his qualifications. So I think he's got 3 or 4 degrees, that man. Huge. Melbourne's got a massive university, and we were kind of right in the thick of it where we were where I was staying in the hotel, and he came and met me there. And then we went to four bars, whatever it was. Fantastic night out. Lucky Roller wasn't with us, because he probably would have ended up in jail or still going right now. And I think Frank would have kept up with him. I'll just say that quietly. Anyway, that was really interesting. And then the other funny thing is this morning, hang on, I haven't heard the bumpers come in. Oh, no, the Vela box is here, so it'll be coming in soon. I was flew back yesterday, clutching. No, I had in my bag 2 kilos of what looked like methamphetamine, but it was Frank's salt, in my pocket, because I carry around, I've got a supply of pure organic food grade bicarb, which I use for everything. You brush your teeth with it, you put in new water to bring your acidity down, whatever that's called. Again, I got the word wrong last week or the week before. Anyway, and as I was walking through the scanner, the guy said, "Oh, you got something in your pocket." And I pulled out a plastic Ziploc bag with what looked like an ounce of coconut. And he's gone, "Oh, no, just take it back and put it through the scanner part on the conveyor belt." And I thought, I'm not putting that. I just threw it straight in a rubbish bin. And I'm surprised bells didn't go off. And then they would have seen a huge amount of what looked like sparkly crystals in my bag. And there could have been a huge furore. But no, an ounce of salt per day's prayers obviously said, "May Rick get home safely," and he did. Fantastic. Anyway, Jan, Eric, I can see you out there. Do you want to come in and talk all the way from Asia? We'll just say that, Asia. Well, come in whenever you want. I can see you're muted. And, fabulous. I see the Vela box in here. We haven't had the bumpers yet. So, and they'll come in, he says, hopefully. I want, have you got any notes here that I've taken over the last week? Haven't done anything for a week. You're listening to Be Told 65. Back after the break.
No matter what your age,
you're listening to another conversation.
Or your affiliation.
On truthmeets.com.
Let yourself engage.
And now on with the conversation.
In the art of conversation.
Be Told, episode 65. On the 26th day after Anzac Day, I didn't see anything. It was huge as usual. Huge as usual. They love this monsterbation of this day, and it is massive over here. Massive. But I noticed this, so they do not shut everything like they used to. Like, I was out for breakfast yesterday with my son and my cousin, one of them. I've caught up with 2 of them, plus their nephews, their children. Fantastic. Oh, I love Melbourne. I think I could be quietly moved there. You never know. Yeah, the thing I would like to also, as a conspiracy theorist of some years, did you see, and I've spoken about this before, on the World Economic Forum, this shifty little guy, not the one that I'm thinking, the little gay guy, Noah Hariri, another guy. Well, I don't think it was Noah Hariri. Proudly bragging that, you know, we've got a way of, you know, I love meat. I love, you know, he's kind of saying, yeah, I love steak, but we've got a way we might be able to genetically engineer humans to be allergic to meat. And there was a picture of a tick involved. And that's what he's talking about. Tick allergies. Now, we've got them here, I would not believe. Now, luckily, apart from my poor pussy who's out there at the moment, in fine form, it was nearly dead last year thanks to one bite from one of these paralysis ticks. These things, and they're getting spread around where my house is by bandicoots. Have you ever heard of a bandicoot? They look like a rat with a point of your nose. I've never, ever seen one alive. I only see a couple dead on the road. But they apparently, they come and they dig up they eat worms or something or other. They come and dig up or roots out of some kind of something in your grass. You see these little holes everywhere. And some were saying to me, oh, that you'll get ticks, because they're covered in ticks, these little bandicoots. And that's how my little, not so little, pussy got bitten by one possibly last year. Because well, I'm not in the bush, but I'm close to it, you know, close to it. Anyway, I was with a client a couple of weeks ago painting her balcony, and she was telling me she has got a rare blood, and I think it's the same as mine, but I've never had one, knock on wood. She gets them all the time, and she said she wasn't able to eat meat for a whole year, and I said, what do you mean could not eat meat? She goes, this particular tick, when it bites you, you cannot eat red meat. It's forget about it. You can eat fish and, you know, some fishes, that is. There's some kind of protein thing in these ticks. Now, these were genetically modified things, 100% guaranteed. Plum Island, plus all the ones they, you know, they sprayed them all over Vietnam and Korea. They bragged about this. This isn't conspiracy theory. And so Lyme's disease, which I live in the capital of Lyme's disease in Australia. And you know how I can spot someone with it? Because when they're outside in the sun, they have to have a thick layer of sunblock on because the sun causes issues with them. I mean, this is a perfect engineered thing, this thing. And that's another reason why I'm not going to be doing this kind of conversation over in another certain platform, because there'd be someone come over and start denying there's any such thing. Absolute wasting my time, which I'm not doing anymore. And they got enough people over on Fakeologist. They do not need me over there anymore. But I will do single shows there, occasionally, if I've got something to say. No problem. One-on-one. But not them fucking 20 people talk fest. No. And they have someone go, I don't even think that there's such thing as this. And now, fuck off. When you witness that many people with an issue for real, and you see the treatment that people that, see, you're not even allowed to call it Lyme's disease or register it over here. They're in denial over here. They pretend there's no such thing. Yet there's people suffering from it. It's an autoimmune condition. And it's usually related after you've been bitten by three or four ticks. You wait for that sound. Yes, he's still drinking ice. It's nearly winter, and I just went for a swim at the beach. It was beautiful. And I got a bit of a tan. Nearly winter. Melbourne, the weather was 25 degrees, if not more. Blue skies, unbelievable. It was just beautiful. They're having a really nice autumn. So, no. Yeah, autumn. Fall. No, autumn. Fall. Yes, fall. Anyway, Jan, anytime you want to come in, come in.
Yeah.
Oh, good, man. How are you?
I'm good.
How is Cambodia? Are you still there or are you traveling?
I'm traveling. I'm in Saigon now.
Mm.
It's really weird. There's much less traffic than normal. Obviously,
you reckon there could be less people there than because there's less traffic.
No. It's the prices of fuel, and the government here recommends people just work from home and so on.
Really? Yeah, well, that's happening at, here as well. The price of diesel, though, went down to two. I just paid $2.45 or $2.50 a litre. I just drove to Sydney and back, which I would never do, but I had a miracle. As I was saying to Frank the other day, I had a really bizarre, some really good luck, and Frank was, you know, nodding away, saying it's his prayer suggestions. He reckons that was what did it. And I'm telling you, the price dropped $1 a litre. Which is a lot.
I think some governments have taken away a part of their indirect tax on fuel for the moment. It won't last long, though.
Oh, no, for sure. No, what they're doing, this is that, what's that technique? That snake, the boa constrictor. It's, you know, how it comes in and what it does to the animal, it strangles them. And as they breathe, it slowly comes in again, and then it allows a bit more, and they breathe again, and they can come in harder. And this is the boa constrictor movement, bio, used on us. For sure. What do you think of Saigon?
It's a good city, but it's expensive compared to Phnom Penh.
Okay, yeah, well, I believe that, because that's what cities tend to become, way more expensive, don't they?
Yeah, Phnom Penh is the capital of Cambodia. Allegedly over 3 million people, so it's not a small city.
No. Different government? Is it, you know, I mean, is it still the same? Do you see red stars everywhere, like I did in Vietnam?
They have the hammer and sickle here on flags, and they have the Vietnamese flag, which is a yellow pentagram on a red background. So, yeah.
The same old, just those same old symbols again. Yeah, the same old symbols. Doesn't matter what country you're in. It's always the same.
Yes.
The pentagram. Pentagram.
The merchants around the world, they are the finances of everything, all institutions, everything. Yep. They are behind the organized religion and behind commerce and behind the political ideologies, everything.
Yep.
Cults.
Yeah.
So long as.
Yep.
When you have unlimited funds, this is easy.
I found Vietnam extremely friendly. Well, you know, Hanoi, and I was in Saigon briefly, but I spent more time in Hanoi, and I found the people were absolutely friendly. There's some, what I found, I stayed in boutique hotels that were Vietnamese owned, because there's a bit of a rebel thing, to, you know, because obviously America and England and France still, you know, own a lot of the big chain hotels are there, and you've got Starbucks all over the place.
Yeah.
But a different level of Starbucks. I don't know, I've spoken about this before, but every country that they come into, they develop a business model for that country. And the ones in Vietnam are what you would call Swiss or French level, beautiful high-end cafes. These are not down-to-earth kind of cafes where you sit around and put your feet up on chairs and these are really flash with really expensive types of coffee. Whereas in Australia, they tried it over here.
It's full of chemicals, though.
Oh, yeah. You know who owns it or owned it? It was Bill Gates' father.
Oh.
That was the main guy. He bought Starbucks back in the day. He'd be dead now, I imagine. Or is he? Not sure.
All the important families are actually front families for the wealth above them.
Mm.
They add a name to it and they put it in their name, but the real owners are above them and give them orders. That's how it works.
Oh, yeah. It's
all done by proxy, obviously, yeah.
Yeah. The Gates family. But anyway, regarding Vietnam, I found it incredibly friendly and a very relaxed place, even though... You take your life in your hands walking across the road, or maybe not at the moment, but normally crossing the road over there is a whole different level of crossing the road if you're in a different Western country. But
it's a technique. It's a technique to it when you understand it. It's quite safe.
Yeah, I learned the technique, but it took me 3 days of being quite nervous. But you just walk across, and they'll dodge you. And they'll slow down. You just take your life in your hand and walk across the road.
You need to look in there
and then have eye contact, and then you walk slowly, and they swirl around you.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
And you can put your hand up also. Mm. Show that you want to walk.
Have you seen that movie I was just talking about, Baraka, before it came out in the 80s?
No.
Okay, well, I recommend you watch it because it's very enjoyable. As usual, it'll be, I would say, they are French or German producers using really high-end equipment. And what they've done is filmed nature and giant cities, and they blended it in with there's an amazing music soundtrack to it. And it's something you've got to watch on a big screen. And, you know, like they've got, they film, and it's quite, you know, you see chicken farms. You know, millions of little ducklings or hundreds of thousands of little ducklings going around conveyor belts and getting their, possibly showing them getting their beaks burnt. What they do with chickens, they burn their beaks so that they can't peck each other. Really brutal. But then they superimpose it into a city, you know, with the, like I was just talking about a friend of mine. He was just filming out his window of Shanghai this morning. That is one big city. That is a massive city. And they filmed.
It was set up after the second Opium Wars, Shanghai.
Yeah.
Along with Hong Kong. It's British merchant nobility territory set up for commerce.
Yeah, same as Singapore.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. And I've been there a few times. When you see the city from the top, you don't realize that when you go, if you zoom into it and hit the ground, as you're walking around, every little laneway behind those buildings is full of markets and food, and it's completely filled up. Every open bit of space underneath those giant towers, every laneway has got business in it.
So the back streets are really narrow as well. You can only drive there with a motorbike or walk. There's no place for cars.
Yeah. I took an amazing photo when I was heading on the taxi back to the airport in Vietnam of just families going past at 80 or 90 k's an hour past the taxi. Five of them, there was like up to three little kids and mother, mum and dad on a motorbike, often without helmets. And I said to the taxi driver, I said, is there any accidents? And he turned and goes, oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah, there's heaps of them. You know, like when you have an accident at that speed and you're not wearing a helmet, far out. I mean, I didn't go to any hospitals, thank God, but there must be a certain amount of, I'd like to find out their death rate from motorbike accidents in these countries.
It's high. It's high.
Yeah.
They don't think about traffic security here in Southeast Asia, none of the countries I've been to. It's not on their mind at all. It's just not a thing.
No, get to work hard. I mean, I got to know that. Look, I stayed in a boutique Vietnamese-owned chain that were, I'm talking about high-end, beautiful hotel, and it was maybe $500, but whatever. It was costing me, $80. This is high-end Vietnam, 80 Australian dollars or whatever a night, but this was like a beautiful service, you know, marble, two or three restaurants. The staff grovel over you because they want tips when you leave, I think. There could be a method to their madness. But I actually met a couple of the waitresses because I was with a chick, a French girl. She was from Paris. She thought it was fantastic as well. She loved it. Because the service was so good, it was just fantastic. The complete opposite of other over here, for instance, you don't get that level of service unless you pay dearly for it. But this is cheap, and I loved it. So, how long are you going to be in Saigon for?
I'm leaving tomorrow for Vung Tau, and then I'm going to stay there for 3 days, and then back here, and then I go back to Cambodia.
Excellent. Apparently, that's a really cool spot too, Vung Tau.
Yeah, and it's cheap, much cheaper than here. And it's a small town. It's like 160,000 or 50,000 people or something.
Yeah. Yeah, my daughter did a really heavy travel through there on motorbikes. Yeah, because you can pay for a driver or a rider or whatever who will come and take you and whoever you're with. You just sit on the back of the bikes and they'll take you and show you everything and ride for you, which I think would be a lot safer to me personally, even though I've done a fair bit of motorbike riding in my day. But that was then, not now. She had absolutely fantastic time there. Loved every minute of it. And she's very widely travelled, you know, these days. I'll get there eventually. But no, definitely Cambodia sounds like me.
Yeah, and it's cheap, and people are much more friendly than the Vietnamese, actually.
Hey, well, that sounds really good then.
Yes. Indonesian people are also really friendly if you go outside the big cities.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to talk to you about, actually, because people don't understand how big Indonesia is in Malaysia and how many cities are in there. That I've got friends that, you know, all about our age, Jan, that have very widely travelled, but they've got money now and they've gone, particularly a couple of English guys I know, they spent a year and a half travelling around in Malaysia, and I've watched their Facebook posts, and they were, you know, they go to these cities and they've never even heard of the city before. There's this giant, huge, beautiful city, beautiful restaurants everywhere, extraordinarily cheap. They're all, this is a Muslim country, right? So when people go on about the Muslims, there doesn't seem to be any issues getting drunk, like you might hear.
It's about 60% Muslim.
60%, okay. What's the other 40%?
You have 30%, you have the 20% Chinese there, and 10%.
Okay.
And 10% Indians, and then you have other people as well. So quite a lot of foreigners in the country. So it's about 60% Muslim.
So where you're staying? Are you staying like in a mid nice place? Are you just going to backpackers and or are you just going into hotels?
No, I'm doing hotels on this trip.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's much nicer. The older you get, the more you want comfort. I want comfort.
Yes.
Yeah. But I just went to Melbourne. I flew to Melbourne. I got a return flight for $100 each way. Now, I couldn't get on a train for that amount of money. So this is, you know, in the middle of what we're going through. I got a hotel right next to my son's apartments, which are right next to the University of Melbourne. I paid I could have paid 60 a night or 70 a night at a cheaper one, but this is, you know, new, clean, two king singles in it for 120 a night, and this is in Sydney, or you couldn't get that for I would have paid way more. So, you know, it cost me $400 for flights and accommodation for two or three nights. In Asia, that would be a month. Possibly. You're listening to Be Told 65, back after the break.
No matter what you say,
you're listening to Conversation,
or your preoccupation,
on truthmeets.com.
You can practice every day.
And now, back to the conversation.
The art of conversation.
The Art of Conversation on the 26th of April 2026 with Jan Erik, OG truther, guaranteed, and Rick, all the way from, I'm in Australia, he's in Saigon, and that's the way it is. That's the way it is. So now, we'll talk about that. I got out of how did I get them? I think it was a garage sale or a secondhand shop. I found a great big pile of 50s and 60s Time magazines in perfect condition. I mean, these look like they're printed yesterday. That's how good they are. And one of them, you're interested in that, I've got plenty more to where that came from. One on the front cover is Guy de Rothschild, and it was a big puff piece about the Rothschild family, December 1963, two months after the Kennedy fiasco. And it's got a great big chart of all the family. And the one that they said that is the richest is not Jacob, is nothing compared to the one that you never hear about, was Edward de Rothschild, that said he is the richest. But they're proudly bragging about how powerful his family is in 1963. You won't see that in any media these days.
Rothschilds come out of Frankfurt. They were working for the Bank of Amsterdam. It's a Venetian nobility and central bank.
Bank of Amsterdam and Amsterdam. What's his name? Amstel, the father.
Yes, Amstel. Yeah,
Amstel.
I found this on the internet a few years ago. When the Napoleon invaded the Netherlands and. They wanted to raid that bank, and there was zero gold left. It was 100% backed by gold. It was all gone.
Where did it go?
I can tell you, the Venetians, they got a deal with the city of Westminster, the parliament there, to get protection.
Yeah.
Like type convoys, and they could relocate to any British territory, including all the colonies. So they left 2 or 3 years before that war started.
Yeah.
Oh, which they financed, by the way. They financed the Russian Revolution.
They finance both sides, usually. It's usually the technique, isn't it?
Well, the financing came out of Venice and out of Switzerland, which is also run by the Venetians. So it's easy to infiltrate France when one third of fucking Switzerland speaks French. Send in your agents way in advance.
Now, have you been to Switzerland? Because I've never been there. What do you think of it?
Really beautiful, but extremely expensive.
Yes.
I was looking into it 10 years ago, and the cheapest hotel I could find in Switzerland was about 350 to 400 USD for one night. That was a cheap, really bad hotel. Good ones you have to pay double. Really expensive.
Yeah, incredible.
Yes,
and the city I've been, following as a guy, Australian guy, who I do recommend, even though he's a bit of he's getting more and more full of himself. Ex-con.
Beautiful around there. It's really, really pretty.
Yeah, he's going there using drones and his smartphone and just filming himself going around, and he's deliberately going to the most expensive hotel or the cheapest hotel and comparing them. He's done it in the Philippines. Very interesting, because it is really good information. It's Spanian, Spanian. He's got a lot of followers. He's making a lot of money. But it's actually, to me, very accurate. When he goes to a city, you'll get a real good taste, because he goes for the cheapest, the most expensive. But what he says about Switzerland continuously, this is a different level of upmarket.
Yes.
Different level. And he went to Gstaad, I think where the ski is it Gstaad? Somewhere it was one of the high end skiing villages, and
yes,
just walking around Gstaad, just walking around and going into different, going to the most expensive. There's Rolex. It's the same with every city in the world, though. As soon as you go to these certain streets, Wellington's the same, even Wellington in New Zealand, and you've got these great big roads, and you'll have the same old Rolex, DuPont, the names everywhere, beautiful, huge shops full of Chinese people buying stuff, usually, or Indians. But
lots of them here now.
Yes, that's what I mean. Even in Vietnam, you've got these streets full of these exact same old businesses, European or Swiss or Venetian type owned businesses. Absolutely no problem whatsoever. No recession affects these people. No recession.
Loads of rich Chinese people. They have a lot of US dollars. They live in the fancy hotels and
they
spend loads of money. They can spend like
Sydney,
$10,000 in one night.
Yeah, in Sydney, you get there's streets in Sydney that are owned, near the rocks in the city area of the CBD, with all the same buildings as this guy's walking around in Switzerland. I've seen the same thing in other different countries. But what you do see at the front is queues of Chinese waiting to get in there to buy these handbags. All those ridiculously priced handbags from whatever that company is, Rolex shops. There are people, Chinese usually, queued up to get in there to start shopping. And there's no recession in their life. There is no worrying about how much this is and how much that is. And I'll tell you an interesting one. I actually worked for, when I was in the building industry, Jan, there was two companies. One was called Moonfair. That's the moon, and it's fair as in the fair moon, the feminine. They had a twin name also called Sun Lord, Sun Lord Development. And you'll see that business probably anywhere you go. And this company was owned by Chinese, you know, billionaires, and they were buying up buildings in Sydney and developing, turning them into very upmarket apartments or hotels. But they have to have these same logos and names, Sun Lord, Moon Fair, Moon Sun, Moon Sun. They're just as much like all the as Babylonian type, ancient Venetian type stuff where they have to have these logos everywhere. France is full of them as well. The sun, you know, you go under bridges and you've got the Sun King, you know, Louis the whatever his name was, Napoleon the whatever. It's just incredible. But it's the same old in the upmarket. When we're talking about upmarket, these people aren't suffering. There's no worrying about...
They never do.
No, but now the Chinese have got it in there.
Go to the store and buy food and it's delivered to them on the door.
Yes.
Yeah. High-grade food.
High-grade food, yeah. Not this, what they call, someone's roaming around doing this thing called goy slop. This is what the goys are eating. I think it's a show.
Exactly.
And he's not 100% wrong. Goy slop. And they're using a tech. You can put this app in your phone that scans items of your food. And I'm talking about what you thought was good food, and it's got zero benefit. It's actually bad for you. Breads and, you know, cheeses and things that I thought, you know, that looks all right. No, you scan it with this app, and it says, no, bad, bad, bad. And it's goy slop. That's the stuff that the public are eating, the noodles, processed cheese.
They need the masses to be malnutrition. They're more easy to handle that way. It's all about control. It's not about their money.
Yeah.
Money is the lubricant for wage slave. It's not. The people on top don't need money.
they can print it. They can print it, Jan.
They do it.
They print their own money.
There's $3 quadrillion in fucking commercial instruments on top of the money supply. There's enough liquidity in the system. The important thing is that we don't get access to any amounts of liquidity.
No.
There's no intergenerational wealth. I should rather say intergenerational power.
Well, we're actually, centuries of power,
not a few decades.
Yeah. Funny you should say that on that 1963 chart of Rothschild's, if you actually go along and have a look at the, it says unmarried with unmarried, unmarried with partner, unmarried. So they don't marry or mix themselves up too much. What the British elites did, they kind of kept to themselves because they know the more they marry, the less likely their wealth is going to stay intact in the family. So they have shared marriages.
They limit the amount of children they have as well because they don't want the family to grow too big.
No.
So they have three children.
Yeah. I noticed too that the Jacob Rothschild's son, forget his name, he married the Nikki Hilton, who's just a good-looking bimbo, just like a sister. But Paris is, you won't find her marrying in that family. But they bring in the same.
They're from Norway.
Are they?
Asian family. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, really? Well, there you go. Interesting. So Jacob Rothschild's son, I think the name is also Jacob. They don't muck around with their names. They keep the same names also. He's had a couple of children to a Nikki Rothschild now.
They're backers, they're owners. They set up the Jacobins, so of course you would name him Jacob.
Exactly.
Why wouldn't they? These people actually know the nobility that is owning the world.
Yeah. So what do you think about that? This thing that I also read is that the Rothschilds are, say there's a level of elites and you go up to say your number as a top elite is number 100. They say the Rothschilds are about 70. They're not up the very, very, very top.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, and they are forbidden to marry into these top people. And these top people are the ones that do not have Wikipedia entries at all on there. And you'll find them in New York. They call themselves the they've got a name that they kind of refer to them as. It's like the, well, they're above
the Venetians first used the Austrian Hungarian Empire to invade Italy to preparing for their so-called reunification, and then they used the French. So yeah. A lot of Venetian families actually have Austrian nobility titles.
Yes,
it's a good way to hide your lineage, isn't it?
Oh, that's smart. Oh, that's smart.
Yeah, they're fucking clever.
You've got to take your hat off to how clever the whole thing is. And I keep trying to say, when people saying, "Oh, it's, you know, it's the Jews, it's the bad," and I said, "Don't think so."
The Jews are the help. All merchant cities were full of Jews because outside the city wall, it was illegal and a sin to do commerce. That was introduced by Pope Medici. It's a long time ago. There were no commerce outside the commercial cities, the enclaves and conclaves. That changed in the 1800s, but before that it was nothing, zero. You had to do business, you needed to go.
Yeah.
And you needed your papers to get in there and do your business, and then we went back again.
Yeah.
Simple.
Yeah. Do you see the British royal family, which Battenberg, Saxe, Coburg, whatever, the other ones that are in power at the moment, that is, is going to go, are they going to go, or are they going to stay, or, you know, this move on like Kaiser, you know, remember in World War One, the bad guy, the Kaiser that you were demonized, he went straight to the country that they allegedly blew to pieces and killed in the Somme and all these battles in World War One. That's where the Kaiser Wilhelm went and retired on a huge, big, beautiful castle with gardens you've never seen before of the highest magnitude, and died an old man. In a country that he was allegedly raping and pillaging in 1914, 15, 16, 17.
You need to look into when all the nobles lost their intergenerational noble titles that gave them perpetual state of who should I say it? Privileges and shit.
Privilege.
It went away in the late 17th, early 1800s. And at the same time, the kings would lose their power as well because they were the representative of the nobility, the rich landowners.
Mm.
Every country has been a republic after that, actually. So they are no real royal families. They even invented one in Belgium. Which is interesting. Which was part of the Republic of the Netherlands, which had no king.
Yeah,
republics don't have kings. They have nobility. They have they're in commerce. There would be a landed aristocracy outside the merchant cities in the Netherlands, but
don't you think too that the best way to describe this, the whole what they've done, is Machiavellian, is a great way of describing it.
He's one of them, so he should know.
He bought six from me, yeah. Machiavelli and his... I've got that book, The Prince. Is it The Prince? Or,
yeah, good one.
Yeah. Well worth reading. And that whole... It was so funny that the restaurant across the road from Sydney Parliament, up till recently, it may still be there, for the politicians, this is both sides, or three sides or whatever you've got over here, where they all liaised. Guess what the name of the restaurant was? It was Machiavelli's. Machiavelli's Restaurant. That was the name of it, and it was a very upmarket Italian restaurant literally across the road where everyone went to and hung out, you know, and did their deals. back in the day. You know, they're quite blatant about it. But Machiavellian, his techniques, it's just duplicitousness and lying, basically, and exaggerations and fooling people. If you could describe the guy, if he was a real person, I'd say he was.
Yeah, I think so. And you have this alleged Chinese, the Art of War, which I think is a Venetian written book anyways. The Venetian actually invented
the Art of War.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fantastic book too. And it's just what you call it, it's just basic common sense of how you do this. And is that saying about be very close to your enemies, keep your friends this, but keep your enemies closer, because they're the ones you need to find out about, not your friends. It's your enemies you need to be finding out how they're thinking.
Absolutely.
The Sun Tzu Art of War, and you're right. Mm-hmm. That was 100% came out of that Catholic secret society. Jesuit.
The Jesuit was set up by the Venetians. They were not set up by the Catholic Church. They killed one pope and almost killed the second pope to get them in there.
Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you this, they wanted you to, or us rather, to know this kind of stuff in a lot of ways, because back in 1980 or 81, a magazine came out. I can't remember what it was called. It was like basically, I think it might have been called Conspiracy or whatever. This is in New Zealand, and England. It was an English magazine, and they had all the stories about the P2 Lodge, and remember they hung what's his name under the bridge with his one leg rolled up on his with a whole lot of rocks in his pocket. The banker, Gelly,
Blackfriars Bridge.
Yeah. So these magazines you could subscribe to came out every week, and you could build up a binder full of, what was going on. But that's when you're listening to Be Told 65, back after the break.
You've reached another top of hour on Truth Meets. Go to truthmeets.com to sign up and participate in our forums and conversations.
Thank you, everybody. It's Rick and Jan, or the OG of information, let me just tell you now.
I posted a good link to you about the Venetian nobility. Can I read up about them?
It's the subject that it's an all giving subject. But I discovered this magazine came out just after I'd heard about this Illuminati thing, and I was just into it. And I can remember, coming home from school. I was at school when I first started reading this magazine, reading about the P2 Lodge. Now, P2 were
propaganda duo.
Yeah, these guys were at a different level. Like there was, they reckon that the head of P2 got jailed in Switzerland, and he walked, and they said he escaped by walking out the front gate. And I remember thinking, that's a different level. It's a bit Epstein-ish when you think about it, too. How they're, blaming this Epstein character guy that's roaming around getting the blame for everything. Isn't it funny how Epstein and Goldstein, we had in 1984, the book, 1984, the bad guy was Goldstein, and now we've got Epstein, Goldstein, and it's blatantly, very straight away when you hear the word Stein, that, this is blame the Jews. It's like the most blatant.
It's pronounced Epstein. It's a German Epstein. Name. That's Stein. S-T-E-I-N. Epstein. Stein.
Yeah.
Like Stein.
Which is Epstein. Rock. Is Stein Goldstein. Rock? Does Stein mean rock? I'm not sure.
Yes, Berg and Stein is a rock or a mountain. Yeah. You have a lot of Bergs and Steins in there.
Yeah, they love mountains as well, don't they? Mm-hmm. Don't they? And Paramount Pictures with the same, that logo for Paramount Pictures, the seven stars above it, is the seven angels that hit that in the Old Testament angel, you know, the demons crashing on the earth onto this mountain. Every logo for your movie, you know, before you sat there watching all the brainwash since 1920 and these images came out in front of you, these stars and women holding up torches, and it was all the same old, your subconscious is full of the truth, but you don't know it until you're told about it.
On the top of the Congress building in Washington D.C., you have the goddess of commerce. She's holding these weights. Before they had paper money, they used gold and they had to weigh it to see if it was correct. And they also measured the volume of it, volume and weight, to find the gold content.
Fantastic.
Always.
This is a show we're going to learn stuff, he says, getting ice out of a esky. And we call an esky mo, not an esky. That means a cold bucket where you can put ice in. Sorry, just for an Australianism there. Fantastic, Jan. So all of the stuff, though, that we talk about that you know and I know is actually in most people's subconscious via Hollywood TV. The things on the back of your car, the numbers, Porsche 911. Why did they pick that number? Porsche 911. It's
911 and 911 is even in the US flag. It's nine columns and 11 rows or the other way around. I cannot remember. It's there. And it's the Freemason logo. It's a 90 degree and a 47 degree. It's everywhere.
Yeah. I heard someone, I nearly fell off my fucking chair listening to this. There was someone, a big show out there going, they said, they're looking at Donald Trump's hat because he's got 45 and 47 on the top of it. And they were going, do you think that might be something? Do you think that might? And I was like, yes.
He's the last president. There's not going to be a new one. I said it.
No. It's history. America's history. Yeah. And America's going to go into
They put two idiots into this alleged position of power. First is the Biden character, and now Trump, and both are publicly acting like they're insane and fucking retarded. They're mocking the people who are the president of the office of president. So.
And what they're doing, what they're doing, the public here, where I am, I just forget about, I can't talk about anywhere else but except for where I am, what I see, what I hear. The people that they blame for all their issues is Donald Trump and Bibi Netanyahu right now. They're the two people that are they're getting the blame.
The United States and Israel are being hated now, and this is by design. They want people to hate people from Israel and from the United States. They deserve their purpose. They're finished. They don't need them anymore.
They
won't be hunted.
My mother was, again, the person that kind of got me into all this. I completely blame my mother, 100%. She said to me, when I was young, she said, look at, she said, Rome and America, they've got the same, it's the same Rome, everything, all roads lead to Rome, etc. And the imagery of America is all Roman, it's the eagle, it's the Roman Empire just moved over there, which once was Venetian, I guess, or whoever.
And the Nazis had all the same stuff as well, set up by the same people. The finance Nazi Germany came from New York.
I read, and that was the Bush's Harriman Bush. Were you aware of how close Joe Kennedy
the merchants of Amsterdam moved their money to New York and to Geneva and to London. Yeah. And which countries have not been invaded, seen any war during the First and the Second World War? New York, Geneva, and London. Nothing.
And London. And yet
why didn't Hitler invade fucking Switzerland and steal all the gold and take over that country? That would be the first thing you would do if you wanted to rule the world. He didn't.
Yeah.
Funny that.
Those gnomes. It must have been the gnomes that protected Switzerland, the gnomes of Switzerland. There's a there with that one too. I talk about that another time.
Oh, yeah. They didn't invade the British Isles, which were just across the fucking English Channel from the Netherlands, which invaded early. They could have done that easily.
Yeah.
That's what's there's something called rules of engagement in war, and the rules of engagement didn't allow that to happen. That's why. Simple.
Yeah. Rules of engagement. Yeah.
Yes.
That's right.
The Americans did in Vietnam as well because of rules of engagement, and the war didn't progress because it wanted a long war.
Yeah. The last best book I read on this particular subject was that book by a very good British historian. He was writing about guy who was he was an Irish, American Irish guy who'd got involved with the they called themselves fascists back, this is, you know, back in England, back in 1937. And the fascists, now it's been demonized so bad that you hear the word fascist and you go, like Nazi, you got to get angry. But fascist means a whole lot of sticks together cannot be broken. And it was meaning that, you know, the small can be powerful if they all join together and you can't bend them. And, you know, fascist is actually a nice meaning to true or to whatever in that term, fascia.
It symbolizes how the merchant nobility are bonded together because then they are stronger.
Oh, yeah.
They cooperate. That's what it is.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah. Well, one of the Genoese families has a fascist on their coat of arms. And one of the cantons in Switzerland also has the same symbol. It's a symbol of the merchant nobility.
There you go.
Yes. They don't compete, they cooperate. That's how you maintain power for centuries.
Yeah.
You go weak. That's another thing you want to do.
Yeah.
The masses has to compete all the time. That is important because then you're weak. You don't trust anyone. Perfect.
Yeah. They know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. But this constant, what they've done with this whole, people that are waking up and going, hang on, they have made sure, and I'm repeating myself as usual, that they've made sure you have just been given so many different amazing semi-truthful or fully truthful stories that to slide down all these rabbit holes that you're never going to be cohesive together, because one of you is going to be arguing about this and the other one's going to be arguing about that, and they've wanted you to be doing this. This has been deliberate. That's why that magazine came out in New Zealand, or England rather, in 1981. They've been, give you a bit of truth, get you to go into this thing, and then X-Files and all these other shows came out back in the day where they slide you down different rabbit holes with UFOs, Sasquatches.
The Rothschild family are well compensated by the oligarchy of merchant oligarchy. To be a front family and then had access to a lot of money. They could live really opulently for, they haven't been around for that long, actually. It's just a couple of 100 years. It's recent.
250 years, so.
Mm-hmm. Funny that.
That's a baby level of,
it's nothing.
What's been going down? And you see now, what do you think? So have you been to any of the giant, through Asia, the incredible stone monolith, you know, the cities that are not there anymore, but there's incredible, stone architecture everywhere from old civilizations.
Yeah, I've been to Angkor Wat. Amazing.
Angkor Wat.
It's expensive to go in there. It's like $45. But no, I had a visa here for 2 years, so now I can actually go for free. So next time I'm paying it. Yeah, it would take a couple of weeks to look into that shit. It's huge.
How do you, when you do it online or do you actually go into a place and do it?
I've physically been there.
Oh, no, no. Sorry, to get your visas and things like that, do you actually do it or just go online to the Norwegian embassy and do it that way? Or?
No, you get visa on entry and then you can renew it within the country. You don't even need to leave. You just use a visa agent. Simple. No paperwork. Yep. You only need to prove that you're 55 years old and that's it. And your passport is valid in more than 6 months and you have enough pages left. That's it.
Excellent.
Simple.
I want to go. I hope my microphone's been recording properly. I want to go to the Kazakhstan, particularly the Astana, which I've renamed. They've had to change the name of it because it's a little bit too obvious for the dummies out there. It's an anagram of Satan. But go and check Astana, which is just on the, it's on the border of, you know, Kazakhstan's another Chinese border city.
It's a huge country.
Huge country and incredibly wealthy as well, but not for the useless eaters there. They got no money and it's very corrupt. You know, if you talk to anyone that's from Kazakhstan, what they'll do is complain about how corrupt their government is. Well, they all are. I mean, can you name me a government that isn't corrupt? I don't think you can.
Under the system of commerce, corruption is a part of it.
Well,
you need corruption. And the people who are corrupt are the people pretending to run the place.
That's right.
That's how you grease it.
Oh, I spoke to my best conversations. I don't do it very much these days because I don't get taxis very often. But last night I got a taxi from the city to my van so I could drive back home. And I had, again, as usual, Pakistani, who these people are so much, a taxi driver has got way better conversation than I can have it with friends and family type of thing, you know. They've all been to university. They're over here.
They've also been in a hardcore Venetian maritime empire through the British Empire in Pakistan. And brutal that shit was. They didn't fuck around in the colony.
No.
I tell you.
Well, he was telling me about the Khans. Now, the Khan is a very important family. That whole Khan, you know, Imran Khan apparently he's been in jail for 2 years. Is he? I can't vouch for that. But Imran Khan was a famous cricketer as well. So all Australians know who he is. And he married into the goldsmiths. It was, Jemima Goldsmith. Goldsmith was another very rich, you know, Jewish businessman in England, another media mogul, I do believe. But he was saying that, he said the corruption in Pakistan is through the roof. But he said he reckons that Imran Khan was an honest guy. And he said, what happens if you're honest in Pakistan? You're done for because corruption will just take you down. So. Absolutely. Yeah, and he said that his Imran's party has now been disbanded because what he must have been, because he looks like a nice guy. He seems like a nice guy, very white skinned. This is what I'm talking about. The Indian elites are not dark skinned, dark skinned. They're like the Iranians. You know, it's the area where Aryan came from. Is Iran has kind of a Aryan meaning as well. I think we mentioned this last week. That hasn't been released yet.
The Persians are Persian. They're not Arab.
Yeah.
Most Arabs wouldn't know that, though. They're not Arab. They must be Arab. No. Never been.
No.
Totally different way of people. They don't look the same. They have the same language, the same culture, no nothing. No similarity. Different.
Well, in 20 minutes, I was in 20 minutes. I've had better conversations in 20 minutes with random Pakistani taxi drivers than I have with my own family. Some members of my own family. These guys are just, they're educated. They know politics. They understand it. They were well educated, even in Pakistan. much better educated than the average Australian or American.
Well, I would imagine as well.
But yeah, no, he was explaining, just like I was getting food from a girl from Kazakhstan, and I immediately started asking.
Kazakhstan.
Yes. She said to me, she said, you cannot imagine how corrupt our government is. You know, if you think, he said, she was trying to explain to me that the government in Kazakhstan is, they're all families, they're all bred, they're all related, and they all deal with each other.
It's a clan system. We don't have that in the Western clans. Mm. All over Asia, even Albania has it.
I believe that.
They take that seriously.
What, so
a clan is a set of extended families that are married and cooperate for intergenerationally to main.
Really, clan, not clown. We're saying clan, C-L-A-N. Yeah, clan.
Yes, to have power and don't lose it.
Clown clans, basically. Clown clans, because they're clowns, but they're clans. But yeah, no, but it's all money, it's all business, it's all negotiation, and you're right, corruption is their method of doing it, and it's Machiavellian. Machiavellian is the great title to have it.
And they want it openly in most countries. People feel fucking despaired because they cannot do anything about it. And these people have all this privilege and I can do all this shit and get away with it. If I do it, I'll get fucking whipped and put into jail. And
no, you get you try over here having a small business and running it and not paying your tax or whatever. You're done for. Yeah, you can come from. Yeah. There's migrants over here that have come here that cannot speak any English hardly. Driving, like yesterday, I was in a tram in Melbourne. The woman driving it was, say, Iranian, or, you know, she was light skinned, but she could hardly speak in English. She was driving the tram. She couldn't even speak the language. Now, I couldn't go to India, Iran, or Middle East, or wherever. Get a job as a tram driver because I can't speak the language. I wouldn't even try. They can do it over here, no problem, no problem whatsoever, and they're quite confident about themselves. It's we're just being totally taken over by different. You're listening to a Beatle, a 65. Back after the break. Thank you. Fabulous. What a great bumper. Thank you, Joel. Joel's moving into his new house, so his studio hasn't been set up, so he can't edit or do any of the shows. So there's two Beatles prior to this one. This is the third one. There may be other people who have done shows as well. I'm not sure. But they'll all be coming out. Give it a week or two, whatever. I'm in no hurry, but great to have a conversation with a guy who knows the stuff, Jan Erik. All the way from Norway, now in Saigon, Steppen Saigon. Yeah. Can I just tell you this? When I was a child, we had a song by Cilla Black called Steppen Side Love. It was 1968 or 69, whenever that came out. When my mother or father switched on the TV, all I could see was little girls running towards me covered in napalm with their skin melting off. News about Vietnam, news about this, bad, 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 everything's, war, war, war. Sesame Street was on, you know, half an hour before the news, blah, blah, blah. But I was convinced that the song Step Inside Love is called Step in Saigon. And we could play that, actually. I don't know why, but we could at the end of the show, but we'll see what happens. But, I was, at 5 years of age, convinced that I didn't, because Hogan's Hero was on TV at the same time, Jan, I thought World War II was still going on until I was about 7 or 8 years of age. Because all I was watching on the news was helicopters shooting things Hogan's Heroes was on TV with the Germans, and
you had war rationings in Europe
at the same time,
far into the 1950s in most countries. So I would say the war wasn't over because it stopped rationing, huh? Started giving people.
War is the all-giving thing for the elite. Whatever they want to do, they'll get, as long as they can say there's a war going on. Now, you'll notice this, that America has not declared war since, I think, 1940-something or other.
They can't, because they're not a country anymore.
That's right.
You need two sovereign entities to have a war, the declaration.
So what do they call it? They just say they've got another name for it, but we think they're at war, but it's actually conflict, or they put another term in there that's not legal. They're having some kind of conflict. I don't know. I can't remember, I have heard.
NATO does something. It's called police action.
Police action. Yeah.
Yeah, the Korean War was police action set up for the UN.
Yeah.
On your Wikipedia.
Don't you think that's why when, all these people, we've got certain people on certain sites going that, war's a hoax and stuff like that. But I just describe it. I said, this is police action. This is people sending their enforcers over to another country that they have no business being there, Afghanistan, Iraq, parts of Syria and some areas. They call it, United Nations call it, they've got these blue hats, and they're not soldiers, they're called something else. They're called peacekeepers. Isn't it fantastic? You've got to take your hat off. This is Machiavelli straight 101. Peacekeeper. You haven't got to...
It's newspeak. War is peace and ignorance is bliss.
Hey, can I just say this? These old Time magazines, right, came out. Uh-huh. The one that I showed you, that I took a photo of, that came out 4 weeks after Kennedy was shot. It is full of interesting stuff. This is pre-Vietnam. It's got all the stuff about how they're calling it. They've got to send peacekeepers over there. They call them... And they had another name, actually. They'd call them peacekeepers. They were calling them, Kennedy had set them up. They were called the Peace Corps. You're right, peacekeepers. Peace Corps, mm-hmm. C-O-R-P. Yes. Anyway, there was an article about Osborne. What's his name that shot Kennedy, allegedly? His mother, his wife is Marina. This is... What's his name? Why can't I remember his name? Where's the magazine? I have to find it. Anyway.
Marina, that's water. That's the sea.
The sea. Yeah, exactly. And have you seen a picture? Have you seen, the guy that shot, that got blamed for shooting Kennedy? What's his name? Oswald. So Marina Oswald was interviewed in this thing, and she... And his mother, and they publish letters that Oswald had sent his mother, it was his mother from Russia, because he was apparently living in Russia. So that somehow Time magazine has copies of all his letters, and they were saying, oh, he can't, he's really bad at grammar. He's not a very smart guy. But what he said in one of the letters, he goes, Mom, can you please send me shaving cream, shavers, and some books and science fiction books. But he said, can you please send me 1984 by Orwell? And he mentions that. I want that you to send me that book. And I was thinking, that's strange, pick that book to want to read. I'll read
it here. This is 1948.
This is Time Magazine, 1963, December. Dear Ma, pieces from the nomadic, neurotic past of Lee Harvey Oswald was still being filled in. Among them were copies of 15 letters, 15, Oswald had written in to his mother, Mrs. Margarita Oswald. Have you seen a photo of her? That looks like a man to me. The guy, whoever's playing Margarita Osborne, I mean, fucking, what did I say, Osborne? Oswald, very strange looking, very masculine looking bloke, but maybe a woman. Ms. Margarita Oswald, in 1961-62, when he was in Russia, where he unsuccessfully sought Russian citizenship, he married a Russian girl named Marina Khrushchevkova. What the letters mostly proved was that Oswald was not much good on grammar. Sorry, he didn't say that. I'm saying that. Was not much on grammar, spelling, or punctuation. Here's some excerpts. If you decide to send a package, please send the following. One can of Rise shaving cream, one razor, Gillette, a pocket novel, Western Science, and the science is spelt all over. He spelt science science, fiction, Time or Newsweek magazine, chewing gum or chocolate bars. That's about all. Ha ha. I very much miss some time to read you. You should try and get me the pocket novel 1984 by Wells. Now, he's put Wells, but it was Wells. Interesting that he said Wells wrote 1984, but it wasn't. It was H.G. Wells. It was George Orwell who wrote that book. Instead of calling it Orwell, he's called it Wells. This is supposedly... Maybe they're making an inside joke because this is there.
I think so.
Last weekend, we went up to the forest 50 miles from Minsk to look for mushrooms. Everybody does this in fall. We only found a few. We had a good time. I don't know what kind of mushrooms they were after. Sounds like more interesting. Marina collected flowers at that time. Dear Ma, well, it looks like I'm going to be a papa. We expect a baby at beginning of March. We would like a boy. What do you think of that? I notice where you say you would like to come to Soviet Union. I don't recommend it in my case. You said something about more cans of shaving cream is not necessary. And all the words he spelt like a three-year-old, like it's all spelt weird. Because one of the cans lasts a long time, 1.5 years. Well, I have pretty good news, Ma. We shall receive our visas about the middle of February, which means we may be able to arrive in the US on the 1st of March. And, you know, this is all pre him getting... the Kennedy shooting, but I'm telling you now, these are gold. The amount of good writing that's in there that you can read in between the lines, or the lies, read in between the lies, because the guy that set Time magazine up was a 100% extremely dodgy guy.
What's the name of the guy? I think he's not in Malta actually.
Yeah, what? I guarantee he was.
Yes.
Not Lucifer. It always sounded like Lucifer. It was someone of that nature. And you'll notice if you ever, because Time magazine is where Americans get their political truth from. That magazine was incredibly
Time and Newsweek and Life, three of them.
And Life. Now, guess who was the number one photographer? Life magazine. Yes, it was. The guy that wrote, that filmed The Shining and every other weird movie you've ever seen. That's where he trained and got his training. why can't I remember his name? Stanley Kubrick. Stanley Kubrick did his apprenticeship and was took some of the best photography you've ever seen that was used to affect people's psyches. So Stanley Kubrick was a black and white photographer for Life, maybe Time as well. I would say so.
That's highly interesting. I didn't know that.
So he became, because he came from a rich, I'll say it again, Jewish family, kind of richer. He went and did his apprenticeship for Life magazine. He learned under another guy who trained him, but his photos were you know, if you go, and I've got it too, I've actually got two or three collections of Life magazine's photographs. Have a look how many times there's a Kubrick name underneath it, you know, that Kubrick took that photo. So, yeah, very important, very important. The same families, the same people.
The Jews are the managerial class. They're in the spotlight. So that,
well, yeah, they're able to be controlled because they've got, you know,
people are trained to hate them and they don't see part of them, though. They're the front of the merchants.
They're the foot soldier.
Look at the link I sent you and look at all the names. You never heard of one of them. I guarantee you. Maybe.
One or two.
Hang on, I'll check it out now. Right.
They never, never, ever mentioned. Ever. Never.
I love that stuff. And especially in New York, they call them the they've got a name that's blatantly obvious. Mm. Oh, I know. They call them the Brahmin. Boston Brahmin. Yeah. That's so obvious. And I told you about my daughter's boyfriend telling me, you know, he's Dutch. And he's, you know what Dutch are like. They're very, you know, quite arrogant about their own country and how wonderful.
But New York was set up by the
merchants. New Amsterdam.
Amsterdam. It's New Amsterdam. I would bet Wall Street and all the finance there.
Yeah. I think we mentioned
It's in the same location as the city of Amsterdam was. They tore down the city walls, but. That territory is still special territory with special privileges.
Yeah, Australia was actually called Van Diemen's Land, or Tasmania was, right? But I mean, Van Diemen was, they got that name, and my goodness, there's some interesting things. But Timo, that's his name, Timo, I forget how you spell it with an H. He said to me, he said he was wandering around New York. He's been there a few times. He said, everywhere he saw Dutch, everywhere, wherever he walked, he felt the same, very at home around New York. And I thought that was interesting.
The seed money from setting up the BIS come from New York. Five investment banks. So that's Venetian merchant nobility from Amsterdam who moved all the gold there.
Yeah.
They financed the BIS. It's on the fucking founding document, the name of these five banks. It's not a secret. You can find it on the fucking website.
Okay, when we talk about Boston Brahmin, when you have a look at those names, read into them. Those are the names of the family. These people don't even have Wikipedias about their family history.
No.
There will be a book, a very expensive book somewhere that you can buy for about $1,000 or $600 or whatever, which we'll talk about them, but is not online. They have removed they've never had online present. But who does? Rothschilds, Rockefellers, etc. They've got online present. You can blame them for everything. But these other families that are probably related to them in some ways or, you know, very, very close business relationships, they're not even mentioned. Not even mentioned.
Rockefellers are a new family as well. They started their business in the 1870s. It's recently.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, the whole story about that, I've gone right into them many times. Check out the burial areas for the when we go back past Devil John.
My mother's grandfather. He was born in 1870, so her great grandfather would have lived then.
Yeah,
it's not a long time ago. Reason.
This is recent history, but I'm I'm living in a country that was, you know, 200.
My grandmother lived to through two world wars. The first world war, the British Empire, they had a blockade of Norway, so no trade got in or out, so people were starving here. We were not part of the war.
Was that Scarpa Flow? Do you remember? Am I thinking of Scarpa Flow? It was when they blockaded the Norwegian waterways. Was it Scarpa Flow? There's some, I'm thinking of, anyway, that just popped in my head, maybe something I've read back in my day.
It lasted under the whole war. Nothing got in and out.
You know, Norway got done over, and I actually know there's guys up here with the second-hand business. They said that they were in Norway buying up German military medals and things like that from markets and making a fortune because there was second-hand. This is
according to Greg Chance and Marcus Allen, they weren't on German soldiers in Norway during the Second World War.
There were no fortifications,
no weapons, no ammunition, nothing.
Yeah.
The coastline is about 700 or 800 of them. They're still there.
They're still there.
Because they couldn't blow them up because the quality of the fucking concrete is so fucking
awesome.
It's impossible to take it away. You need bunker busters and shit, and there are houses around, so it's all there. The cannons are gone though. They were melted then.
We've still got incredible stuff here that makes no sense as well in certain areas of Sydney, especially on the cliffs where the entrance is into the harbour. There's military bases, tunnels like you would not believe. And a friend of my sister actually, she's got a friend who is, I'll hazard a guess, of European stock who grew up in New Zealand, but he came over here and he worked for the film industry and he can make things. He's a very clever guy. And someone had told him, you need to lose weight. So instead of joining a gym, he thought, I'm going to go and investigate these underground tunnels I've read about. And he made a backpack and in it he had hidden skeleton keys and files and things like that, so he could actually go under the ground and go and find these tunnels and cut. Because I'm telling you, they are padlocked and fenced off. These giant tunnels system underneath the whole of Sydney is covered in them. They run from these military base to military base, and these are tunnels that were dug well over 140 years ago, maybe more. It could be longer. Anyway, so he was taking photos, and I've seen some. These are these giant tunnels that are going underground, where they apparently could ride, a thousand.
The Spanish Empire was still an enemy of the British at that time, so they had to prepare for
an alleged invasion. Be told 65. Back it up.
No matter what your age,
you're listening to Conversation.
Or your affiliation
on truthmeets.com.
Let yourself engage.
And now back to the conversation.
In the art of conversation.
Thank you for listening to Be Told.
And they used the United States to obliterate the Spanish Empire. They took the Philippines and they took Cuba and they took all their holdings.
Yes. You know what they offered? You know, so with the Philippines, the Spanish had it and the Americans just said, we can have a war or we'll give you $10 million and you can just leave. And they just took the $10 million. This is back in the day or whatever the amount of money. It was millions of dollars. And they left and the Americans came in and took over their military bases. There was a bit of fighting and contretemps going on. There would have been plenty of people that didn't like that. And that's what police actions are. You know, they bring in forces to come in and kick off the people who have said, no, I don't want them to have this. This is my family. They've had this for, 50 years. They've got to go. And that's what war's about. You know, they just come over and kick you off your land. And Vietnam, class example of it. Those beautiful regional farming areas.
Vietnam was about filling the gap when the French left, because they had control of the opium fucking thing from the Golden Triangle. So the Americans wanted it.
Yep.
And the same in Afghanistan a few decades later. Now they control all opium traffic.
Yeah. When anyone comes in and says, all wars are hoaxes. I do agree it's organised, but I just say to them, yes, they are, but it's rename it a police action or another gang taking over another gang's turf. Yes. And we've got this in a smaller microcosm of...
In commerce, it's called a hostile takeover. Sometimes you need to use guns doing a hostile takeover.
Yeah, yeah. And some people have got bigger ships and more people with better machine guns or better trained, and they just walk in and they do it. But if you look at just simple things like the Sydney gang wars for heroin, say, or the different drugs, what you've got, you had originally it was the Aussies that were doing it. Next thing you know, the Greeks and Italians kind of came over and they took over this kind of thing. In the last 20-something years, we've had the Afghanis come over. The Middle East, people that came from Lebanon that weren't Lebanese are actually what you would call people from different Middle Eastern tribes that are just ruthless. They came over and they took over.
Lebanon was a part of the Ottoman Empire, so it would be a mix.
Ottoman Empire was huge. Huge. But I'm just talking about a small, like, we're not talking about countries, we're just talking about business and drug dealing takeovers. In Australia, we had the Greeks and the Italians running the underworld. Next thing you know, the Middle East, the gangs from Lebanon come over. And these guys were proficient with guns and machine guns and they didn't care. And so there was big turf wars taking over the heroin distribution. Next thing you know, the Afghanis were brought in and the Turks. And these took over at a completely different level by just firebombing, machine gunning, shooting, and it's still going on right now. We've got so much major crime in, just say, Sydney, forget about, and Melbourne, would say. But different gangs taking over different turf, and that's what's been going on. But you've got flags involved with these other companies.
Hostile takeover, it's commerce, simple.
Commerce, yeah.
Yes. Commerce is a problem. It's not a solution to our problems. When you have commerce,
you have a problem. Yeah, yes. You're right. It is the problem. Is the problem, yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, but it's a true thing. And people, it's like, I use this analogy, and I'm talking about 8 years ago when I first appeared on Fakeologist. I said, when someone was saying, there's no such thing as a war, no one would fight each other. And I'm saying, oh, yes, they do. And a small, you're talking about a small, look at it as a microcosm of the whole.
Most people cannot kill someone and look them in the eye. So the numbers are totally blown out of proportion. Yeah. People die during war.
Of course.
Not as many as we told, though. Yeah. Let's say 5% of what they say. It's still a lot of people.
But it's still a hostile takeover and people are shooting each other. And we're getting people. Yeah. So in Sydney, this is say in Sydney. So I contacted, there was a whole, so the illegal tobacco thing, which is this is what's causing the biggest fights at the moment. Certain gangs come over and they take over illegal tobacco manufacturing and distribution.
Or with the problem you have in Australia,
it's
huge. Crime with it.
It's huge.
How much is the price of cigarettes now in Australia?
Well, you can go and buy a packet for $8, or you can pay $50 for a legal packet. So illegal $7 or $8.50, and that's all tax for a packet of. It's about $45 to $50 for a packet of 20 cigarettes. It's
in Vietnam and Cambodia, you can buy a packet of cigarettes for between 60 and 80 US cent.
Fantastic.
And they still can make money on it. It's the same product.
Yeah. Well, talk about vaping then. Okay. There's all young people and a majority of anyone that, even my cousin, my sister, I seen that everyone was vaping the other day. That they've gone from, so in New Zealand, I can go, you can fly to New Zealand now, you can buy one for $10 for a good quality vape. You can switch flavors and do all sorts of things. Here, they're now $45. And I went into an my son said, Dad, can you pick me up a vape while you're in Sydney? And I said, yeah whatever. I don't care, you know, like if he wants to do it, whatever. And I went inside, I spoke to three different Indians that all ran these illegal things. And they didn't think I was a cop. They just, you know, just said, no, we've got none. And I said to one of them, I said, so what's happened? He goes, oh, the Chinese factory, apparently 3 weeks ago, two or three Chinese vape factories all burned down. Now, that doesn't surprise me because that's how they take out businesses, by just burning them down. And he said I cannot sell people. No one wants to buy a vape for $50 because they were paying $20 recently. Mm-hmm. But he said the supply chain's down. So they're coming after vaping at the moment. But yet I can go to New Zealand or probably Asia and just pick one up for probably $5 or $10. But so you imagine the markup if you're selling. Now, everyone I know is vaping. Not everyone, say 60% of people I know vape.
Uh-huh.
That's a lot of people. And say half of them, all the young people I know, basically.
If you buy in bulk, I can imagine you can get it from China for maybe $1 for each or something.
So they're paying $1, and so there's $1 of vape. Now, you can sell that vape over here now comfortably, especially where I am right now, for $45. That's 45 times your money over again. Now, they're 1,000%. There are gangs that are into this and they're fighting each other and firebombing other companies and shooting other. It's going on now. So that is what I would call a war. There is a vape war. That is a war. People are shooting each other to get what they want. So when people say there's no such thing as it's you're not talking about the real world here. You're talking about something in your head.
Let's call it the armed conflict then, because there are no wars declared because there are no countries left after 1945.
Yeah, oh, exactly. I agree.
The UN countries.
Mm. Now, countries
you have the sovereignty of the emerging states, like City of London and a few left. That's the only sovereign territory. Everything else is just.
Yeah, on a more interesting conversation. What is your favourite food? What kind of food do you eat mainly now that you've left Norway? And when you're in Norway, what was your main diet consisting of in Norway?
I've been doing low carb for a long time, so I'm on the same thing.
Yeah, I'm that same. I'm there. And the older you get, the less carbs you want. When you go out for, say, your main meal in Vietnam or Cambodia, what are you eating?
Mostly meat and then maybe a little bit of rice. Or meat and eggs. Depends. Yeah. I prepare most of my food at home, actually.
Yeah, well, that's the best way to do it.
I don't want things fried in fucking vegetable oil. It's toxic.
Oh, my God. Interesting that in this Time magazine, the big adverts, because this is a South Pacific edition, so it's designed for Asia and Australia and New Zealand. Big adverts for farming and produce, but one of the biggest adverts is for oil extraction plants and for factories. And what they're bragging about is you can get all this oil out of, they call it cottonseed, which is what we're using a lot of over here, which is what Asia uses. That is toxic, cottonseed oil, one of the worst. Rapeseed, canola, toxic. They're bragging about this. Soy in this magazine. This is 1963, so this is what was coming. They were setting up factories to start manufacturing oil out
soy,
of product.
Soy is full of plant estrogen as well.
So soy will affect your hormonal problem. You'll get all these issues with your thyroid.
Men need fucking dick pills not to get it up.
Yeah, and that's true. Isn't it incredible when you see young
people? This wasn't a thing 30 years ago.
Look, I'll just say this. Most young people couldn't keep it down, let alone get it up. It was a massive problem. That was what you had when you were from, you know, puberty to, you know, 70 or 80, is keeping it down. Now, the market is for getting it up. And you see these truthers, supposedly truth people, you know, bragging about, you know, Alex Jones, Jay Dawes. I've heard the whole lot of them are all bringing up selling because they're getting paid to sell erection pills. Now, there's obviously a problem if that's necessary for young
people. They need their 500 million people on the fucking Georgia Guidestones number.
Yeah,
they want it quickly. If you can't get it up, it's hard to get a woman pregnant, isn't it?
Exactly. But I'm not seeing any shortage of Indian or African women roaming around pregnant at the moment. I'll just say that when I'm roaming around the streets.
They don't eat the hyper-processed food either. They eat the real fresh food.
And they cook and they fry in meat products. You know, when you go for home cooking, if you're in even in Vietnam or wherever you go,
lard is really cheap here. Yeah,
lard's what you should be cooking in too, because that's, you know, that's literally your fat, and you can reuse it again and again and again. It's you keep it in your fridge. You just refreeze the stuff.
Yeah, you can take it to a sieve and take it out to the. Well, whatever is left of meat stuff, and then you use it again. Easy.
I stopped because I was a person that used to go to cafes quite regularly. And while I was in Melbourne, my son and I went out to a cup for breakfast a couple of times, had really nice meals. But he said to me, because he's 100% on board with me and seed oils and what you fry with, he said, "Dad, I don't go out for breakfast anymore unless you're here. I just cook at home because I can make my own, you know, cook them." He's got ghee.
We are responsible for our own body. You cannot blame big pharma and big fucking big chemical food producers for you being unhealthy. It's on you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'm so proud to know that my son, who's only 19, is he said, "Dad," and he showed me his cupboard in his apartment. He's got, and I looked at him and he 100%. It was raw. He's cooking in ghee, which is rarefied butter without the water in it, which is fantastic.
You take out the protein part of the butter, and then it's addictive. Beef tallow, if you can get it, it's also good.
You can get it, do you remember, you know, as a child, to me, in New Zealand and England and Australia and whatever, fish and chips is one of our staple diets. But it was potatoes that were deep fried and meat fat. The fish...
Beef tallow or normal.
Beef tallow.
They even used to be like McDonald's in the beginning.
It was. And that's why I love McDonald's fries, because they smelled like having a roast, basically. Not anymore. Not anymore.
One of the guilds decided we're not going to have anything healthy in this McDonald's food, so that's out. It's not a business decision. It's a power decision. It's about power, control.
Well,
the weaker you are, the easier you are to control your stupid wage levels. It's easy.
Sorry, shutting up. Now, one of Alan Watt's things that he said that I thought was fantastic years ago was about the food. He read that Julian Huxley's speech from the UNESCO 1946-47, I think it was 46 or 47. If you read that and you understand that what he said, he meant, he wasn't just saying what he thought, but he said that we will be, I don't think he was the guy that said we need to take man off his platform. But
he's talking about the must-bes, so that is the thing that will be implemented.
Mm. Now, you'd love this book.
That will be implemented.
It was. Well, now, I've got this 1965 edition. It's called The Playboy Reader. And when I say Playboy, I'm talking about the magazine. But there's no pictures of naked women in this book. It was just the interviews done by Hugh Hefner back, because he was a good journalist. He's paid. He was a controlled asset as well. But he interviews. You would be baffled about how many amazing people went into Playboy. And I'm talking about Henry Kissinger, Zbigniew Brzezinski, Julian Huxley, Aldous Huxley, anyone that was anyone did.
It's a good way. It's a good place to hide good stuff because also that just a fucking porn mag.
Yeah, people think
it's a and throw it in the trash. Brilliant.
Yeah, check. You've got to look when if you ever can get hold of 60s to 70s Playboys, even Penthouse magazine, and you know, forget about the naked women. Read the interviews in these magazines, and you're getting the stuff of the highest grade, telling you real information. And this book, it's called The Playboy Reader. I think it's 1968. It's a collection of all the interviews. And I was just looking, when I first found it, I went, hang on, Aldous Huxley, Julian Huxley, Henry Kissinger, multiple interviews with Henry Kissinger, who, when he's interviewed, he's not fucking around. He's telling you what's coming, what they're going to do, how they're going to do it, and Brzezinski particularly.
He went to China and set up the technology transfer from the United States to China to set up the factories. He was there for a long time.
Yeah, and using Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon was the guy that was actually doing a lot of the negotiating. You know, he was the middleman in between a lot of big dealing. He was highly regarded in China, and he spent the rest of his life negotiating how to remove big business out of America and put it into China.
They had tax benefits. They could move their business out. They made money on it, and they were compensated for the time spent at the factories were down. They got money from the government extra.
Yeah. What about
you don't have to lose money? Just move it over there.
Yeah. This is the Temu thing. I've seen my son ordering T-shirts, rock, you know, like some weird rock band that he's into. He can get a T-shirt delivered from China within about 5 or 6 days, or this is pre, you know, what's going on at the moment. But there's no tax, and I said it's free postage. What? You know, Alan Watt was saying, you know, it's not free postage. You're paying for the postage. You are paying for the postage. And there's some free trade agreement that's signed up that China can just send stuff for free.
Now, China has a special status under the World Trade Organization. It's called Most Favored Nation Trading Status. So they don't pay nothing anywhere. They have free access. But it's the same money that moved to China. It's not Chinese. It's set up there. No. Location. No.
It's not China. I've got all these collectible stuff that I've got in my house that I wanted to sell, like a little vintage Game Boy game, and someone wanted to buy it. And you're listening to Be Told 65. Back after the break.
You've reached another top of hour on Truth Meets. Go to truthmeets.com to sign up and participate in our forums and conversations.
Be Told, episode number 65, on the, whatever I said, 26th of April, 2026. You know, if I wanted to send, say, a magazine, one of my books, I sold it overseas, I would have to pay $30 shipping to get that book to you, wherever you are. The Chinese and Temu and all these other free trade, they can send you a sticker that you've ordered for your laptop from China. It will get here within a week, and there's no charge whatsoever, no charge at all. So therefore, this free trade agreement with China, the most favored nation, which it was, and who came
most
up with
favored nation trading status? It's commerce.
Yeah. No problem whatsoever. But if I want to do it to make money for a small business, it's going to cost me $50 to send one magazine. Or whatever, like really expensive for shipping for a useless eater like myself.
I know. If you get something from China, you buy a whole container, they give you the container and they don't want it back even. Containers are expensive.
it's one law for them, one law for us. And
I know
what?
People in Norway have ordered shit in containers and they get the container and you get a really good price when you fill up a container with one product to buy with a huge amount on it. Yes.
Yeah.
Extremely cheap.
Yeah. It's even like I noticed my son was showing me he said, oh, no, every now and then we shop at that Costco, which is that giant American, Chinese run, but American owned. He was showing me, he can buy like Frank gave me 2 kilos of his salt. Now, I forget how much that would cost, but it's a fit, you know, it wouldn't be cheap. I've got a great big thing. He had a 4 kilo bucket of Maldon sea salt.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah, yes. But they got it from Costco, and he was telling me, you know, this will last you a year or two years maybe. But it was only a fraction, you know, let's say 4 times more than what I was paying for a little container of Maldon sea salt was $10. This is enough to last you 2 years. So there's some kind of deal going on with the big boys that you can buy big amounts of stuff. And I'll tell you this now, rich people that I work for, they all buy in bulk. There's no such thing as going off shopping and buying one this or one that. They buy enough for a year and they pay a fraction. Most people we know who just buy
really rich, they have an employee who do the shopping for them.
Of course.
If you have the black Centurion card, there's a concierge service and they can do the shopping for you and deliver it at the door. If you want to go to Harris or wherever you want to go, I want this and this and this and this. You don't even need to leave the house. They come and deliver it to you for free.
That's why when you listen to politicians and certain rich people, when they say, how much is the loaf of bread, just to a normal politician, they go, oh, I can't tell you that. Because they don't know.
You need to ask my accountants. I have no idea. They never see the numbers.
No, they don't care. And they don't know or care because they get their food, you know, in packages, sent in bulk. It's done by their staff. None of this. I'm just going to go to the markets to buy some, you know, a few bits and pieces. They pay for their food in one big payment for a year, or the essentials, and then they go to restaurants for the rest of the time. That's just the way it is.
Set up as restaurants and the cruise ships and big yachts and so on. They have a huge freezer room and a huge cooling room in their house. It's a room full of stuff.
Yeah, I'll vouch for that. One of the things that I noticed, because I go to some fairly upmarket places, they have wine cellars that you can walk into that are about half the size of most people's liquor stalls or bottle shops or whatever in their own house. And they buy all the wine in bulk. It all comes and they buy it, you know, and this is good wine. I'm not talking about crap stuff.
Yeah, I used to live in Oslo on the west coast, the west side, with coupon. And we have wine monopoly in Norway, so we cannot buy in the store the liquor and shit. And all the rich people there came in there, fucking Mercedes, Geländewagens and huge cars. And when they did their, actually they did their own shopping, and it was like 20 or 30 or 40 boxes of stuff. And then they drove home. It's not like one bottle of this and one bottle of that. It was.
No.
They probably spent like, $10,000, $15,000 in one go, boom.
But that's a year's worth of this. So, you know, but we're conditioned to go do this truckitarian survival for a week, you know, or go shopping.
They don't like people of the lower classes. And you want to do it like that. You do it once.
Yeah.
Simple.
Yeah. Well, just dealing with the general public is not part of their life anyway.
They don't want exposure to us at all.
No. And they don't want you to know how well they're doing either. They'll always, you can ask questions. I've asked questions to people I've worked for. They don't even want to talk, you know. It's like, they just know this.
They have car collections, but the garage is under the ground. So you don't see any cars on the property and they're all hidden. Simple.
Yeah.
Mm. And they drive them in at night when no one is awake, so no one even knows. It's like a small garage on the front of the house, but under the house it's fucking 600 square meters of parking.
Huge. I go to these places every now and then, and I'm in Sydney. There's suburbs that have just got, and I'm looking at these gates on these buildings of the around the surrounding this big house. and they've got, you know, they have gargoyles. You always spot, you know, old gargoyles everywhere, big wrought iron gates. These people are not living the same life we are. These people have got a completely sheltered life. They shop online. They've got people delivering. They don't even have to deal or think about what money. It's because.
Well, they have stuff. They have lawyers and accountants and everything.
Yeah. I remember after the First World War, that the people that made the money were the people that were involved with the chemicals and explosives and, you know, the DuPont. And these families made so much money through war that they don't even. They're not even on, again, there's no Wikipedia with their name on it. These people are not part of your life. These people are the ones that are, like we said before, the Boston Brahmin is a great example.
Yeah, you have a family, and the Wallenbergs in Sweden as well, they have delivered, they are the ones owning and set up the SKF, the ball bearing company, and the They got a recipe from Alfred Nobel to produce explosives, and so they've been they have been sent to both sides since the mid 18th century.
For sure.
The Germans and
the more you read into H.G. Wells, because I know he was just like the propagandist there, but. This book, it's called Michael Foot, who's the English politician, The History of Mr. Wells. Look at the photos of who he's standing next to, you know, with their arm around him back in the day. It was anyone that was anyone in the entire world. I'm talking about China, Asia, Germany, England, America, wherever. That guy was hanging out with some incredible amount of rich people, and he was just the middleman, you know, writing the fiction to, you know, for the future.
When all the railways were built, all the mega rich people, they had private railway cars. They didn't meet the public. It was...
they don't want to talk to the public. These horrible, smelly public. To be honest, Jan, if I had that money, I would enjoy that as well, because I hate getting on the train full of idiots. You know, I listen to their conversation. I'm going, where am I? Who am I? Why am I here? You can see that.
I feel the same. I'm definitely born into the wrong social class.
Yeah. I totally agree. I'm going to go. That was a good chat, man. I'm going to disappear I'm going to go and eat something or other.
No, we have
spoken
for a long time.
It's been a good show. Hey, that was a good show. Be told.
It's all on the fly. I haven't looked up anything.
That's why I want to do it. That's like, I'm telling you, one-on-one conversation when you got no interruptions is the way you get stuff out of your head, because I've got clutter in my head. I've read so many books.
Read up on the Venetian link I sent you.
I will. Absolutely. 100%. I'm just looking
at they're claiming that they went away. No, they just moved them out to other places. But they didn't.
It's a very clever maneuver. It's like the shell trick. You put that coin under the shell and move it around a whole lot of times, and you start losing where it went. But it's the same guy that's running the shell game. He knows where it's going.
Exactly.
He knows where it's going.
Simple.
Right.
Stuff.
Fantastic.
What's a good one?
I'll chat to you next week or whenever you can come back. I'll be probably, next week, week after, whenever you want. Sunday's great, though. Suits me.
Yes.
It suits me, sir.
It's a good one. What's
fantastic.
Good one?
All right, over and out. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Be Told, episode number 65. What show? I'll send a song to Joel, but it's not going to come out for a while. But always good to talk to Jan. He knows his stuff. Fantastic. So Be Told 65. What song? Let me think. No, I'll think of something and I'll send it to Joel. So we'll be going out and I'll be back next week or whenever. Thank you very much. Bye.
shine.